Iti. Thus. Priyam. Unto the deer. Vagu. Sweet. The chitra. Variegated. Valpahai. By statement. Saham. He. Sanfayatva. Satisfying. Achyuta Mitra Sutaha. Arjuna, who is guided by the infallible Lord as a friend and driver. Anvadravat. Followed. Damshitaha. Being protected by Kavacha. Ugradanva, equipped with furious weapons. Kapidvajaha, Arjuna. Guru Putram, the son of the martial teacher. Ratena, getting on the chariot. So translation, Arjuna, who is guided by the infallible Lord as friend and driver, thus satisfied the dear lady by such statements. Then he dressed in armor and armed himself with furious weapons, and getting into his chariot, he set out to follow Ashwatthama, the son of his martial teacher. So you can repeat. Arjuna, who is guided by the infallible Lord, his friend and driver, thus satisfied the dear lady by such statements. Then he dressed in armor and armed himself with furious weapons and getting into his chariot, he set out to follow Ashwatthama, the son of his martial teacher. So there's no purport to this text, so I'm going to read the next text with a purport and then we'll comment. Tam apattantam sa vilakshadurat kumarahud vigna manaritena paradravat prana paripsururvyam yavad gamam rudra bhayad yatakaha. Ashwatthama, the murderer of the princes, seen from a great distance Arjuna coming at him with great speed, fled in his chariot, panic-stricken, just to save his life, as Brahma fled in fear from Shiva. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. According to the reading matter, either Ka or Arka, there are two references in the Puranas. Ka means Brahma, who once became allured by his daughter and began to follow her, which infuriated Shiva, who attacked Brahma with his trident. Brahmaji fled in fear of his life. As far as Arka is concerned, there's a reference in the Vamana Purana. There was a demon by the name Vidyunmali, who was gifted with a glowing golden airplane which traveled to the back of the sun, and night disappeared because of the glowing effulgence of this plane. Thus the sun god became angry, and with his virulent rays he melted the plane. This enraged Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva then attacked the sun god, who fled away and at last fell down at Kashi, Varanasi, and the place became famous as Lodarka. That's interesting. Alright, so, Om Ganatum Randasha Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So, some of the devotees weren't here for the original explanation of the context of this particular story. The context of the story is Ashwatthama just killed the five sons of the Pandavas as they were sleeping. And Ashwatthama, feeling very proud of himself, brought the heads of these five sons back to Duryodhana, who was lying with his midriff broken. And his spine. Bhagavatam also says the spine broken. Not only the pelvis, but the spine. And that was horrendous, actually. And so he brought it back to Duryodhana. The heads, thinking that Duryodhana was going to say, you know, Hari Bol, thank you very much for doing this. Now we finally got an even. But Duryodhana First of all, he understood it wasn't the heads of the Pandavas. Ashvatam thought it was the head of the five Pandavas, like Arjuna, Yudhisthira, Kula, Sahadeva, and Bhimsen. The way he understood it wasn't the head of the Pandavas, they weren't the heads of the Pandavas, is that he touched them and they sort of like shrunk. Had it been the heads of the Pandavas, then they wouldn't have done that. So when Duryodhana saw that it was the heads of the sons of the Pandavas, he became very upset because he understood the dynasty was not going to really be carried out. Because he also was concerned with the whole dynasty. He wasn't just simply self-centered, but he wanted his dynasty to be carried out, at least by his cousin brothers. So anyway, so as a result, Duryodhana died. And Ashvatthama, at that particular juncture, was confronted by the Pandavas, and especially Draupadi was completely upset, because we talked about that yesterday. A mother's affection for a child is the closest thing to pure love of God, and so Draupadi's affection for her five sons was completely, you know, almost transcendental. It was just like completely selfless. Whereas all the types of affection within this material world are very selfish. Whether we're talking about, you know, conjugal affection or friendship or any sort of, even the son's affection for the mother usually is what I can get from the mother. So it's not actually reciprocal. You understand, the mother is thinking only of the son's welfare and the son is thinking, what can I get from her? So it's not exactly, you know, yayatamam prapajante, like it is with Krishna. Anyway, so she was very upset, and Arjuna, in order to pacify her, in the last verse, he said, you know, I'm going to make it so that after you do the funeral ceremony for your five sons, you can stand on this guy's head after I chop his head off. And being Kshatriyas, that was actually quite enlivening. You know, vengeance. We talked about this yesterday. About different types of vengeance or different types of justice, restorative justice versus retributive justice. I think you all know what that means? Retributive justice means that you pass a judgment on someone just to make yourself feel better, to make him suffer. This is actually demoniac consciousness, that one gets happiness from seeing others suffer. One thinks one will feel better after making someone else suffer who has done something wrong to you. But this doesn't really alleviate your problem. Actually, it makes you sicker, because then you have this anger towards the person. And it doesn't help the person. The person doesn't learn his lesson. Just like sometimes a mother will say to her son, I'm going to teach you a lesson. Did you ever hear that before? Teach you a lesson you'll never forget. Well, and then she, you know, spanks him, or my mother used to use a brush on me, which nowadays I would call social services on her. Isn't that now you call social services and protect me from my mother? And sometimes she'd even use a belt, you know, a belt. You take a belt. And take one of your father's belts and teach you a lesson. And so it didn't teach me any lessons. I mean, the only lesson, as I said the other day, it taught me to not reveal what I did wrong, which is lying. And it also taught me to be sneaky about different things. And it taught me different techniques of running away from her. It didn't teach me good behavior. It doesn't actually teach children good behavior to do that. It just teaches them pain avoidance and, you know, traumatizes them, you know, so their whole life they're subject to post-traumatic stress. I mean, one time my mother, I'm just my own stories. One time my mother wanted to force me to eat soup or something like that. And I said, I'm not going to eat it. She said, I'm going to teach you a lesson. And she poured it on my head. She took the whole soup bowl like that. Of course, I had to take a shower and clean myself and everything out there. But it didn't teach me anything. Because, and she used to force me to eat certain foods like beetroot, and I can't stand them nowadays. It just taught me to hate beetroot. So that's called retributive justice. And you see that in the penal system in different countries, where they put people in jail, and then what happens is the people don't become honest. There's a what's they call a recidivism rate. That means a revolving door. You know, people go into the prison, then they learn how to be better criminals, and then they come out. Isn't it? They have, it's like school. You go in and you got to associate, good association in the prison. And then you get training, you know. You get training with all the best criminals. Or, actually they're not the best. The best ones would never go to jail. They're called politicians. Isn't it? Those are the best criminals. And bankers. Right? Because they charge you money for giving you, lending you money. And if you don't pay back, they take your house away. Does that happen sometimes? There's a mortgage, they take your house away. Or your car, or whatever. Anyway, so it really doesn't teach, that's called retributive justice. It doesn't teach people a lesson. And there's another thing called restorative justice, where, I mean, it's interesting subject matter, where let's say I harm you, then instead of just like torturing me in some prison somewhere, then I am made to confront you and hear how you suffered. And so, in other words, it's supposed to evoke some empathy on my part. Because generally, if we hurt someone, we see them as an object rather than a subject. You understand? We see them like, I mean, we see them like a car or some object. A subject means that someone has feelings like you and I. That's actually Vaishnava consciousness. You know, paradukkhatu ki, that yeah, someone else's happiness or distress is more important than my happiness or distress. So empathy is like that. You actually consider that other people have feelings. Most people haven't understood that, that other people have feelings. I mean, theoretically, they understand that. And that's called, people like that are called psychopaths. You know, psychopath? A psychopath means someone who has no empathy for others. And certain type of psychopath is called a sociopath, anyway. And you got quite a few of those people running around. They're very exploitative, like that. So the whole idea of restorative justice is to evoke some empathy in people. Now, sometimes people are actually definitely not capable of experiencing empathy, either due to their childhood upbringing or genetically. There's been many books written about this. There's one famous book called No Conscience. You can write. I recommend you read it because it'll help you understand how not to be exploited in this world by other people. Because as many people have actually no conscience, they just want to exploit others and for their own self-centeredness. So anyway, some people are like that. So in those cases, it's better to remove these people from society so they can't hurt people anymore. They simply won't learn a lesson no matter what. So there's two types of people. But most people are not like that. So there's restorative justice. In any case, what was advocated here was retributive justice. The Draupadi would feel happy standing on Ashwatthama's head, literally cut off from his body. And really, that doesn't do anything. It doesn't help Ashwatthama. It doesn't help Draupadi. It doesn't bring the sons back to life. It's just, it makes you feel good that you got even. You ever have that feeling you want to get even with someone because of what they did to you? But that's not Krishna conscious. It's definitely not Krishna. Of course, Kshatriyas, they do feel like that sometimes. You know, teach you a lesson for what you did to me. Ha ha. And you become so happy. You see? You got sick. Jai. So anyway, so that's one point here. It's not actually a Krishna conscious mood, attitude, or emotion to have. So if we find ourselves feeling like that, feeling hateful towards anyone, then really we should correct that. And we should also understand that whatever anyone does to us is actually being done by Krishna, arranged by Krishna for our own purification. I mean, what are we supposed to learn from that? You know, identify, it's Krishna, but what is Krishna trying to tell us? And what does Krishna want us to do from those things? So, in other words, a devotee has no enemies. That's one of the qualities listed by Lord Kapiladev. Ajata Shatrava Shanta Sadhava Sadhabhushana. The ornaments of a Vaishnava are listed. Tirikshava Kurunika Surada Sarvadehina. Ajata Shatrava Shanta Sadhava Sadhabhushana. And it's interesting that, frankly, all those qualities relate to other people. Tatichava, you know, Tatichava means tolerant. That means tolerant what other people may do. And not only tolerant, but as described in the Bhagavatam, Tate Nukampam Susha Mikshmana, Bunja Navatman, Kritam Vipakam, Ridbhag Bapuravir, Vidadam Namaste, Jivete Gyo Mukti Pade Siddhaya, but to go on serving Krishna happily. Like Haridas Thakur tolerated the whipping in 22 marketplaces. And he kept on chanting. He didn't say, you know, Krishna, why have you done this to me? You know, I've been chanting your name, you know, three lakhs of names a day. That's 64 rounds times 3. 192 rounds. I've been chanting your rounds, your name. And look at, you know, what am I getting from this? You know, Krishna, I'm going to stop chanting now just to teach you a lesson. I'm not going to offer my food to you anymore. You know, so you won't get anything to eat from me. Krishna couldn't care anyway. He gets plenty to eat from his Lakshmis in the spiritual world. So, Tiktikshava, he tolerated and he remained compassionate towards the Muslims who were beating him in 22 marketplaces. And there's so many things about that. So, Karunika. Karunika also relates to other living entities. That means being merciful. Tatikshiva Karunika. And then, other words, Suradasavadeinam, that also relates to other living entities. Being a friend to all living entities. And then also Ajata Satra relates to all living entities. That means having no enemies, Ajatashatru. Like, Yudhisthira is known as Ajatashatru. That means he whose enemy was never born. Aja, that means to be unborn. Ja means to be born or birth. And Aja means unborn. Like one of Krishna's names is Aja, which means he's unborn. Ajopi sana viyatma bhutanam vishuropi shan. That's a Gita verse. And then, Ajata Shatrava means the one's enemy has never been born. In other words, you don't consider anyone to be your enemy, even though other people may think that you are their enemy. That's really something, if you can do that. Nowadays in Kali Yuga, we find like even family members, they consider each other enemies. Isn't brothers sometimes, they think, he's my enemy, I hate him. Like that. It's really horrible. But previously, you know, these great saints didn't have any enemies. Anyway, Jata Satrava Shanta, Sadhava Sadhabhushana. These are the qualities of the saints. So, Yudhisthira was like that. Bhimsen was not like that. Bhimsen was the opposite. Because it said about Bhimsen that, after this whole attempted disrobing of Draupadi occurred, he was like a trampled serpent. In other words, a trampled serpent. Serpents, and despite all the propaganda, usually snakes aren't dangerous. Except if you step on them. Then he became dangerous. I mean, one time I was walking in Mayapur, and a cobra was like this close to me. And even, luckily I just stopped in time without I almost stepped on him. It was like in the household area of Mayapur. And I was just walking. It was like dusk. That's when the snakes come out. Dusk and dawn. They're not out in the middle of the day because the sun is too hot for them and they're cold-blooded creatures. So I just stopped. And then he just said, Hare Krishna Maharaj. And went on his way, you know. But had I stepped on him, it would have been like all over for me. Yeah, there's snakes everywhere. It's India. And then it said also that if there's a male snake and a female snake, there's an interesting story. Like when Prabhupada was in Mayapur, one time the devotees went into the toilet and there was a snake coming out of the toilet. That's pretty interesting, isn't it? And then they devotees killed the snake, obviously. But then Prabhupada said, you got to find his wife. Because the wife will go after you then. You know, you can't just kill the male snake or the female snake. They're actually partners. They're actually partners. So they're better half, you know. They're married, you know, snake Swayamvara. So anyway, there's actually stories where the snake will, if someone kills a snake and then the person flies back to some other country, the snake will sneak into the person's luggage in order to kill them. And then they just open up their luggage at the airport or something like customs. They get killed. So that's like a trampled snake. So Bhimsen is described like that, as someone who always experiences, like if someone wrongs him, he always experiences, I want to get even with him. In fact, when Bhimsen would actually attack an enemy, he wouldn't just like kill him. He would turn him into a ball of flesh. There's that story of Kichika. When the Pandavas were in exile in the kingdom of Virat, and this Kichika was the brother of the queen, and the Pandavas actually were actually in disguise. Bhimsen was actually the cook. He liked that service. Because he could eat, you know. If you're the cook, you can just sneak all the food you want. And Arjuna was this Briha Nala, the eunuch dancing teacher. And Draupadi was Sarindri, she was the hairdresser. So, of course, Draupadi, being actually an expansion of the goddess of fortune, was extremely attractive. So this Kichika became attracted to her. And, I mean, one time he even physically attacked her and she had to run away. And then eventually she said to him that actually I do love you, but I don't want to show it in front of other people, so meet me in the dancing hall tonight. And so Kichika became very enthusiastic. So Draupadi, it's described without telling Yudhisthira or anyone else, because Yudhisthira would have stopped the whole thing. But she went to Bhimsen and she said to Bhimsen, you actually love me. Much more than this Yudhisthira or these other people. So she actually like used feminine wiles on Bhimsen. You actually love me, so you have to do something. So Bhimsen agreed. He dressed in a sari. First of all, he was on top of the bed in the dancing hall, and he had the sari over his head, because it looked a little heavy as a lady. But anyway, so he had a sari over his head, so you couldn't tell. And Draupadi was under the bed, and this Kichika came in. He said, "Sweetie, I'm here." And then, and Draupadi under the bed said, "Yes, come, my beloved." And then, yeah, it's true. True story. That's in the Mahabharata. Anyway, and then so he enthusiastically came up to the bed and said, "Oh, please remove your veil." And you know, the veil came off. And there was Bhimsen, and Bhimsen really just let him have it. He just kept fighting him and fighting him and fighting him. And finally, of course, he killed him. Because Bhimsen could actually kill anybody. He was Vayuputra, son of Vayu, who was a brother of Hanuman. And then he turned him in. It's described you couldn't distinguish where his Kichika's head was, or feet, or any part of the body. It was like a basketball. It was just like complete, like flesh, a flesh ball. And so, you know, he really liked vengeance. And he's really enthusiastic about vengeance. And he had a temper to him and everything like that. In fact, here in the previous verse, the first verse we read today, it's described as, it's interesting, the Arjuna is described as a Kapidvaja. Kapidvaja, of course, that means, Kapi means monkey. Dvaja means the person who has the flag of a monkey on his chariot. It's interesting. And that's due to Bhimsen also. Because there's, I think, the story of the Mahabharata that Bhimsen was climbing up to get some lotus flowers for Draupadi. I mean, the Mahabharata is filled with these stories of Bhimsen doing things because Draupadi pushed him to do things. You know, he goes up and gets lotus flowers from Kuvera's lake, and he kills all the yakshas who were Kuvera's associates. I mean, he definitely gets himself in trouble many times. And then finally, Yudhisthira has to save him. I mean, so many stories like that. So one time he was going up to get lotus flowers from the higher planets for Draupadi. And as he was going up, he saw this monkey in his path. And he said, "Get out of my way, you stupid monkey." And basically, it was Hanuman. And Hanuman said, but he was in disguise. He appeared like an old monkey. And Hanuman said, "Just move my tail yourself." And he couldn't even move the tail. And then as a result of that, you know, he paid obeisances to Hanuman. And as a result of that, Hanuman agreed to become the flag of Arjuna in the chariot. And that flag, not only was it an image of Hanuman, but it was actually Hanuman on the flag, and who roared so loudly that many of the soldiers on the opposite side died from the flag. Arjuna didn't have to fire weapons. The flag was a weapon in and of itself. So this is an interesting description of Arjuna in the first verse that we read today. In any case, we should not be like Bhimsen. Bhimsen also was not vegetarian. I hate to tell you. He ate just about... I mean, obviously he ate things that he killed himself. I mean, hunting. He didn't just like go to Pick and Save or supermarket or something like that. Go to the neighborhood butcher, you know, Countdown supermarket or something, and get some meat. And he certainly didn't eat cows. But he would eat, you know, they would eat deer or other animals that they would kill. That's the Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas allowed to do that. And so he was a voracious eater. As we mentioned yesterday, he was known as Vrikuldara, which means wolf stomach. In other words, his stomach was, he was always hungry. Always hungry. He would eat more than his own share, and as a result of that, anyway, he left the body at the end of the pastimes that are described in the Mahabharata. In any case, we should be like Yudhisthira. He's the person we should be like. And Arjuna. We can learn things from Arjuna, too. Arjuna, of course, he was one point in his determination. He, there's this famous story, The Eye of the Bird, and he was asked by Drona, when Drona asked his students to shoot the eye of the bird, Dronacharya asked Arjuna, "What do you see?" And he said, "Do you see the tree? Do you see me?" He said, no, I only see the eye of the bird, the center of the eye of the bird." So that we can learn from Arjuna that particular consciousness of being Ekaha Kurumandana, you know, completely focused. And we can learn from Yudhisthira this Ajatashatra, which is very important. That means having no enemies. So that means in our own interactions, we should not hate anybody or hate anything. As I mentioned before, we should always see Krishna behind everything and love all living entities. So this is our challenge, to be like Yudhisthira. So, anyway, these are some of the points. So any questions or comments or problems about any of these points? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you can, that's out of mercy. It's not simply that to get even with the person. That's not the point. The point is out of mercy. The person has committed a crime, killed someone. And therefore, to alleviate that person from their own karma, there's capital punishment, and also to free society from having to deal with this guy again. You know, nowadays they just keep the murderers in prison, or they even let them out again. They keep them in prison, and how much money has to be spent? In the United States, over 1% of the people are in prison at any one time. I don't know what the percentage is here. It's probably similar. You can find out, you know, Google it. That's a nice saying in English. You want to know anything? Google it. It's in the dictionary, actually. You can look it up in the dictionary. The modern dictionary, you know, Google. So you can find out, but there's a high percentage of people in modern society in prison at any one time. And, so instead of just like having to deal with that person and pay for, you know, how much does it cost to maintain someone year after year after year? Well, you know, probably in prison, if someone's a murderer, probably costs $50,000 to $80,000 New Zealand dollars a year to maintain that person. And you're paying the taxes to maintain that person. So, I mean, there's benefits. I mean, to kill him, I mean, it appears to be cruel and unusual punishment, but it actually saves society. It alleviates him from his sin. I mean, there's many benefits to it. And it's not death. I mean, because he goes on to another body. And perhaps a better situation. Because in the present body, he's just going to be trouble. I mean, they have riots in prisons too. I mean, prisons are not the most congenial place to live. Of course, they have different types of prisons. Some are prisons for white collar crime. You know what white collar crime is? That means people in the stock market who cheat or something like that. Those are like summer camps. Isn't that, I mean, they're not high security prisons. But still, you know, there has to be, in other words, the justice has to be given in such a way as to help the person, not simply to get even. That was my point. But unfortunately, people have this concept of justice as getting even with someone. And it really doesn't help you. It creates diseases in your own body when you hate people. In fact, cancer is known to come about due to people's like animosity or hate. If you have repressed anger, especially, you know, diseases like that come, or heart disease or something like that. I mean, that's not the only cause, but it's a contributing cause of cancer. Yeah. No, he should have been killed. The lady who died, I think they were. Yeah. There were several cases actually. There's one case even in South India recently. I think it was in Bangalore or somewhere like that. There was one in Bombay, and there were several in Delhi. And first of all, the Indian justice system, it can take like hundreds of years to get a judgment. Of course, now they've accelerated it. They fast track it. Yeah, but previously, you know, by the time it went to court, you know, everybody would be dead already. The victim as well as the perpetrator would be dead. Justice.
In this case, can the person be restored? I mean, can you have
restored justice? Yes. But not that we let the person out, but the person, people do those things because they think that women are objects rather than subjects. You understand? It's very common. Actually, you want me to start talking about, you know, low-class Indian society, some low-class Indian society, because chauvinism is very present or prominent in India. I have to say that. I mean, just like one of my disciples, Kishori, you all know Kishori. Do you know Kishori? No? You don't know Kishori. She was telling me her experience in India last time. She was sitting in, you know, a restaurant, at the place where we live. It's a protected community there. And she was sitting with her husband, Shingananda. And the people were looking at her like she was a piece of meat. You understand? I think you women know what I'm talking about. You know, just looking at her like, you know, she was in the supermarket and you just pay some money and you buy the piece of meat. And she's not even a Western lady. I mean, she's obviously, you know, she comes from Fiji. From a good family in Ba. Anyway, and she was saying, I don't want to go to India, she was telling me. Because then, you know, that was her experience. Of course, in North India, it's quite worse than South India. There's different places. I mean, UP is one of the worst places. So there's the chauvinism. Why is the chauvinism there? Because people are looking at others like objects. Not thinking that person has feelings like me and everybody else, but they're thinking it's just like a computer, you know. Computer or this table, You know, I don't feel any compassion for this table. I don't care. You know, I can just hit it. So they see people like tables. I mean, that's really it. That's the point about lack of empathy. And, you know, women in particular are seen as objects in a large part of India. I'm not saying everywhere in India. It's not high-class families, certainly. But they're seen as objects. I mean, for example, if your son dies, then you just kick his wife out of the house. And you find so many widows in Vrindavan because their mother-in-law, even another woman, kicked them out of the house. Isn't it? I mean, it's so cruel. It's so cruel. Or in Food for Life, sometimes we find, in Vrindavan, we find little girls on the road dying because the parents just don't want to take care of them. Especially the girls, you know, because the boys, they can bring in money and do things like that. And the boys remain part of the parental family. But, and then there's one story where one girl was found and she had some disease and they took her to the hospital and cured her. And the mother got very upset that the girl was cured. The mother said, you know, what, now it's your responsibility to take care of her now that you cured her. You know, so people, it's just so horrendous that people see others as objects rather than subjects. So with certain people, you can evoke some empathy by having them sit down and hear how they suffered when you did this to them. Let's say, you know, Krishna Chandra, let's say I yelled and screamed at Krishna Chandra, you're useless, you're hopeless, you know, and this and that. And then he goes to, an ombudsman, the guru ombudsman in ISKCON. He says, you know, my guru is abusing me. So then I'm made to sit down and hear from him. That Gurudev, when you said that I was useless, hopeless, you know, I'll become Krishna conscious in 10 billion births. It really is painful for me. And he starts crying, and then I said, well, he actually has feelings. Disciples actually have feelings. I didn't realize that before. You know, so that's... Isn't it? I mean, and that's really a way, if people are able to, I mean, some people are not able to have empathy, but if people are able to, it really teaches you something. You know, I didn't realize that. I mean, sometimes, like, children will be abused, and then later on they'll tell their parents about it when they're 30 years old, and the parents will say, wow, I didn't realize that you experienced that. So that's, you know, that evokes some empathy. So that's called restorative justice. And it's a, you know, it's a theory of justice. This, isn't it?
Yeah, when he has the victim come in front of the perpetrator.
Yeah.
The perpetrator feels what the victim is telling.
Yeah, that's exactly. He feels, but you have to be careful that the victim doesn't feel re-victimized at that particular juncture.
There's a counselor.
Yeah, there's a counselor. There's a counselor. So it has to be done under, you know, guidance of expert people, or actually the victim is going to feel re-victimized. You know, so the perpetrator has to be made just to sit still and listen to it. And then he also, part of it is he has to reflect what he has heard. You know, there's a facilitation there he reflects. It's not that difficult, but it's a technical way to do it.
It can happen close to, we had one accident. The boy witness really damaged our car.
Yeah.
One guy, perpetrator was a very young journal. His parents were quite rich, so they contacted the assistant and the counselor contacted us.
Yeah.
So three of us went, and he came forward. And we told how he felt.
Yeah.
And he really apologized. And he should have compensated.
Compensated, yeah. And did he cry? Did he cry when he apologized?
Yeah, otherwise he would have been in prison.
Yeah, that's called restorative justice. That's good. That's better than retributive justice. Although sometimes, you know, you do have to put someone in prison if they don't have the capacity.
But they have a bad record if you're in prison.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he wouldn't get a job after that for his whole life.
But the parents, they're quite rich because they want you want to come. They're sorry. They should forgive them.
Should have asked $1 million for that. That would have done. I mean, just you want us to let your son off? $1 million. Build a new temple for Krishna. Yeah, if you're going to get an accident with someone who's rich.
Oh. If you have a problem with the action, they compensate with the, you know,
no one pays. Insurance. Yeah. It's like insurance. Mm. But also instead of taking some, you can also sue someone for negligence besides that, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another thing. All right. I think we have to end now. It's time to take my duties. All good. Shri Prabhupada, Shri Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Yeah.